Hello, everybody. I'm Warren Smith coming to you from Charlotte, North Carolina.
And I'm Natasha Cowden in Denver, Colorado. We'd like to welcome you to the Ministry Watch podcast.
On today's program, Arkansas pastor Stephen Smith steps down after fallout from mishandling abuse allegations against a former children's minister. We'll have details. Also, controversial megachurch pastors Mark Driscoll and John Lindell seemed to reconcile on stage at the Stronger Men's Conference last week in Springfield, Missouri. But since then, tensions between the two leaders have only intensified. We'll take a look. And how a small U.S. evangelical seminary is defying the odds. While many theological schools are shrinking, this one's enrollment is booming.
But first, we begin today with news of two resignations from leaders of Orange, a ministry known for hosting one of the world's most prominent family ministry conferences, which was held this last week in Atlanta, Georgia.
Orange released an official statement stating that its founder and current chief creative officer, Reggie Joyner, has resigned, along with the CEO, Kristen Ivey. Reggie has admitted to past inappropriate adult relationships which violated our company policy and eroded trust within the organization, the statement said. During the course of the board's investigations, Kristen also disclosed a past inappropriate relationship with Reggie.
Well, can you give us a little more background about these two individuals?
Yeah, Joyner is 63 years old, and he's had a wide reach within the evangelical world. He helped Andy Stanley start North Point Community Church while serving as executive director of family ministry there. He worked as a youth pastor for Sherwood Baptist Church in Albany, Georgia. That's the church that was made famous after it produced blockbuster films like Facing the Giants and for kicking off the movie careers of the Kendrick brothers. He has also authored 30 books on parenting and leadership. In September of 2023, Orange announced that Ivy would be its new president and CEO, describing the move as one that Orange had thoughtfully planned over the past few years. Joyner subsequently transitioned to being Orange's chief creative officer. Ivy herself has written more than 20 books, primarily on parenting.
So what happens now?
The organization said it doesn't have a definitive timeline for hiring the next CEO, but says that it will move forward thoughtfully and diligently. Mike Clear will step in as acting president in the meantime. Now, neither Joyner nor Ivy are part of the Orange Conference this week.
And there's another resignation to announce.
Yeah, there is. The one you mentioned at the, or we mentioned at the top of the program. An Arkansas pastor has resigned after admitting that he failed to properly handle sex abuse allegations against a former staff member. Stephen Smith is that pastor. He said he was formerly at Emmanuel Baptist Church in Little Rock, Arkansas, and that church has been at the center of controversy since last year. In December, Smith apologized to his congregation for failing to inform them of sexual abuse allegations made against a former children's ministry worker.
Do you know what happened?
Well, the alleged abuse was reported to have occurred 9 years ago in 2015 when Patrick Stephen Miller worked as Emmanuel Baptist Assistant Director of Children's Ministry. Miller left that position the next year in January of 2016, a year before Stephen Smith was hired as the lead pastor. But Smith acknowledged in December that the church had taken proper steps to inform law enforcement, but for 5 years, Smith knew about the abuse and didn't disclose it to the church. Miller was subsequently arrested in December of 2018, charged in 2019 with a felony of second-degree sexual assault. In January of 2022, he pleaded guilty to a lesser charge of misdemeanor harassment and was given a one-year suspended sentence and was not placed on the sex offender registry. Now, this is significant in part because Emmanuel Baptist Church is one of the state's largest congregations, but should also add that since the sex abuse controversy surfaced last year, attendance has shrunk there fairly significantly.
Our next story involves a pastoral suspension within the United Methodist Church.
The senior pastor of a historic Methodist church in Raleigh, North Carolina, has been suspended with pay after being accused of multiple instances of sexual misconduct. The Reverend Greg Moore had pastored Edenton Street United Methodist Church for the past 3 years. This is a 200-year-old church that up until this scandal had seen as many as 600 people in attendance on its Sunday morning services. The church informed parishioners of Moore's suspension on April 14th, and a spokesman for the church told ABC 11 in Raleigh that they were looking at protocols to promote healing, as well as to ensure that this will never happen again. Now, according to the United Methodist Church Book of Discipline, Moore could be suspended for a maximum amount of 120 days, and even if he's cleared of the charges, he will not be back at Edenton, though he could potentially work at another United Methodist church.
Orrin, let's look at one more story before our break.
A student ministry leader arrested last year on suspicion of child molestation has pleaded guilty and been sentenced to 12 years. Last year, Ministry Watch reported on Michael Sasser. He's 41 years of age, a youth ministry co-leader at Redeemer Church in Modesto, California. Sasser turned himself into authorities after family members of a victim contacted police to report the child abuse. Authorities charged Sasser with 3 counts of sexually abusing a child, including continually sexually abusing a child 14 years of age or younger for acts that occurred in 2022. In June, Sasser pleaded guilty to several charges, including the continuous sexual abuse of a child. Authorities sentenced him to 12 years in prison. As a result of a plea deal, though, the court dropped 2 other charges against him.
Well, Orrin, we're going to take a quick break here. When we return, James River Church pastor John Lindell calls on Mark Driscoll to repent after things get more heated following the Stronger Men's Conference. I'm Natasha Cowden, along with my co-host Orrin Smith. We'll have that story and much more after this short break.
Hey, everybody. Orrin Smith interrupting the podcast for a very special message. You know, a couple of years ago, I met a man named John Adink, who I was really impressed with because he was very generous and very knowledgeable about foreign missions. He had a heart for missions, a heart for reaching unreached people groups, and he had the ability to give significant sums of money to missions organizations. But after doing that for several years, he had something of an epiphany and realized that a lot of the money that he was given was being wasted. And he wrote a book about that experience called How I Lost $1.5 million in Missions. You know, if you're a donor to a foreign missions organization, maybe you support a missionary, maybe you're a ministry leader of a missions organization, or perhaps a pastor, elder, or deacon that supports missionaries through your church, you really should read this book. We'll send it to you absolutely free as our thank you for a gift of any size to Ministry Watch this month. Just go to ministrywatch.com and hit the donate button at the top of the page.
Welcome back. I'm Natasha Cowden, along with my co-host Orrin Smith, and you're listening to the Ministry Watch podcast. Well, next, an update on a story we reported on last week when megachurch pastor Mark Driscoll got booted off the stage at the Stronger Men's Conference for calling out some of the conference's entertainment acts as having a Jezebel spirit.
Yeah, following a heated exchange at this year's Stronger Men's Conference, Mark Driscoll and John Lindell appeared to reconcile. However, as events have played out publicly over the past week, their disagreement now seems far from over.
Now, for those who may not have heard about this event, the conference was sponsored by Lindell's James River Church in Springfield, Missouri, and was held at the Great Southern Bank Arena on April 11th through the 13th. Driscoll was slated as a featured speaker.
But on the opening night of the event, a man named Alex Magala performed an act on stage that many people thought was risque and inappropriate for a Christian event. And the next day, Mark Driscoll criticized the performance publicly. But while he was on stage criticizing the performance, Lindell interrupted him, shouting at him to get off the conference stage. Lindell blasted Driscoll for not following the biblical protocol for correction laid out in Matthew chapter 18, saying that if he had a problem with the entertainment, Driscoll should have spoken to him privately.
Now, Lindell disappeared for about 30 minutes after he spoke on the stage, and he reemerged along with Driscoll, and where the two men seemed to display forgiveness and solidarity.
But during an evening service at James River Church a few days later on April 17th, Lindell accused Driscoll of attempting to cause division within the Lindell family. Now, according to Lindell, Driscoll even encouraged John Lindell's son, David Lindell, to take control of the church from his dad.
Yeah, David Lindell also alerted his father of some other things that Mark told him.
According to Lindell, Driscoll also told his son that he needed to differentiate himself from his father and brother and to become the leader of James River Church. Driscoll also allegedly said that David Lindell's brother Brandon, who works at the church as well, is a broken man and that something is wrong with him.
Now, Lindell urged Driscoll to publicly apologize for refusing to stop the spread of lies regarding Alex Magala, a Christian brother whom he claims had a wife and children and had become a Christian 10 years ago.
Lindell has since made his own apology regarding Magala. On April 21st, Lindell took time during his sermon on Sunday to apologize for inviting both Driscoll and Magala to the Stronger Men's Conference. Lindell did not explain why he was apologizing for inviting Magala, whom he reportedly had defended earlier, along with certain aspects of his performance.
Now, Warren, our next story is also an update from something we reported on last week. Two Oklahoma women were brutally murdered, and the four suspects are part of an anti-government group called God's Misfits. But they're not the only group that's going by that name.
Yeah, that's right. Four suspects accused of murdering a pastor's wife and friend claimed to be part of an anti-government religious group that, as you said, Natasha, called themselves God's Misfits. A church group, though, with the same name says that they're getting confused with this anti-government group, and it's giving them some unwanted attention. And I think it's only fair that we should help them clear their name.
Now, what can you tell us about the other group called God's Misfits?
Well, the other group is led by a South Carolina preacher. He has a ministry, as I said, of the same name, and they saw a huge increase in traffic on their website, as long as negative publicity. The pastor identifies himself publicly as Preacher Squirrel, and he says that he's led godsmisfits.org since 2015. He told KAKE News that his organization has nothing to do with the one that the suspects claim to be a part of.
Yeah, Squirrel's ministry is located about 1,300 miles east from where the killings occurred.
Yeah, Preacher Squirrel said God's Misfits is just the name that he and his wife Sunshine came up with to call themselves as they spread the God's word. The website says that their ministry is designed for anyone who wants to come to Jesus, including working men, bikers, truckers, Sunday workers, doubters, anybody. Squirrel claimed that he's never been to Oklahoma and was unaware of the four people charged until reading the national headlines last week. He wanted to clear his name and clarify that his intentions are to promote the word of God. He said he was praying for the families impacted by the tragedy in Oklahoma.
Our next story is somewhat extraordinary because it's of a seminary which has grown 500% in the last 6 years.
Regular listeners to this podcast or readers of the Ministry Watch website know that Christian higher education is in some trouble. And that's why the story of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Ridgeland, Mississippi is so interesting. In the fall of 2017, The school had only 60 master's students and about 15 doctor of ministry students. Today, though, the school has 497 students overall in credentialing and degree programs. Elijah Friedman, who serves as vice president of enrollment at Wesley Biblical Seminary, said that the master's degree program has grown 150%, and the total population of the school has also increased dramatically as well.
Yeah, there was a time when the school was talking about closing, but now the school has nearly as many current enrolled students as it does alum.
There are three factors that Wesley Biblical Seminary gives as the cause for this enrollment increase. One factor is the establishment of the Global Methodist Church. Now, the Global Methodist Church is something that we've been reporting about here at Ministry Watch. It was established in 2022 as the more theologically conservative alternative to the United Methodist Church. Now, Wesley Theological Seminary is the first of six seminaries approved by the Global Methodist Church. The second factor is that WBS has a diversified set of program offerings. WBS is offering different levels of education at different price points. The seminary currently offers both undergraduate, graduate, and doctoral level programs, along with a lay institute. And the third factor is that it's flexible. It has both in-person and online courses.
And WBS used Zoom for classes before the pandemic, and that was really successful.
Yeah, that's right. Now, of course, a lot of schools resorted to Zoom during the pandemic, but I think what's different about WBS is that it provides options and you can mix and match. You can be both in person and remote. Many students are now attending class mostly remotely, however. The switch to an online model has helped the school become more affordable and more efficient as well.
Well, Warren, we're going to take another break when we return our lightning round of Ministry News of the Week. I'm Natasha Cowden with my co-host Warren Smith. More in a moment.
Hey, everybody. Warren Smith interrupting the podcast one more time just to remind you that this month, the month of April, we are giving away a book called How I Lost $1.5 Million in Missions by John Adink. It's a book that I think everyone who has a heart for missions work should read. I think it'll help you become a more effective steward of the resources that God has entrusted to you, especially if you want to divert some of those resources to missions organizations. We'll send this book to you absolutely free as our thank you for a gift of any size to Ministry Watch during the month of April. Just go to ministrywatch.com and hit the donate button at the top of the page.
Welcome back. I'm Natasha Cowden with my co-host Warren Smith, and you're listening to the Ministry Watch podcast. We like to use this last little segment as a sort of lightning round of shorter news briefs. What do you have first?
Well, before the break, Natasha, you might remember that I mentioned that Christian higher ed is in trouble. More evidence of that came recently. Notre Dame College said that it would conclude in-person instruction at the end of the spring semester of this year. According to Higher Ed Dive, an industry trade publication, Notre Dame College attributed the closure to declining enrollment, a shrinking pool of traditional age students, rising costs, and massive debt. And I should add, of course, that Notre Dame College is not the famous Notre Dame University, the one in South Bend, Indiana, which is known for its legendary football programs. This is a different Roman Catholic college based in Cleveland, Ohio. It has secured agreements, I should add, with nine partner colleges and universities to help current students in good standing continue their college careers through what's called a teach-out program for transfer students. Teach-out partner institutions will provide students opportunities to finish their degrees using the credits that they are bringing with them from the shut down Notre Dame College. The last day of in-person classes at Notre Dame College will be just next week, Thursday, May 2nd.
And what's our next story?
Well, the Internal Revenue Service does an annual data book that kind of unlocks all the information that it has about nonprofit organizations in this country. We have assigned Shannon Cuthrell to write about the data book for the last couple of years in a row now, and we just published an article from her this week. One of the more interesting things about this year's data book is that there are now 1.78 million tax-exempt organizations in the country, up about 2.2% from the year before. I should also note that the IRS approved nearly 100,000 new applications in the past year. That, believe it or not, though, is slightly down from 2022 when they approved about 115,000. As in previous years, audits of tax-exempt organizations were extremely rare in 2023, totaling less than 8,000 filings.
And who's in our ministry spotlight this week?
Greater Europe Mission, which is headquartered in Monument, Colorado, Natasha, not far from you, just north of Colorado Springs, recently saw its Ministry Watch donor confidence score fall from 65 to 60, in part because it has not been filing its Form 990s with the public. The organization petitioned the IRS to be reclassified as a church, which is a practice, of course, that we discourage here at Ministry Watch. Greater Europe Mission is a mission sending organization that works in countries throughout Europe. In 2023, GEM brought in a revenue of about $29.8 million.
And who did Christina highlight in Ministries Making a Difference?
Last week, City Mission of Schenectady, New York, cut the ribbon on its new Ambassadors headquarters in the downtown area there in Schenectady. The building is part of City Mission's Ambassadors 2.0 program, where ambassadors work directly with people in need within the community to provide food, clothing, blankets, and a lot more. Also, another headquarters dedication, Ron Hutchcraft Ministries, recently celebrated the dedication of its brand new On Eagle's Wings Leadership Center this past weekend in Harrison, Arkansas. The Discipleship Center will host Native American believers in a gap year program, preparing them to minister to their own people who are often struggling with loss, addiction, violence, and other tragedies. And we also want to mention Christian Community Action, or CCA. In Texas, they placed their 70th family through its rapid rehousing program in the past month. CCA also serves its neighbors through financial planning, job skills training, English as second language classes, and a summer feeding program for at-risk youth. By the way, CCA has 3 stars in terms of financial efficiency, which is a good score from us, an A transparency grade, and a donor confidence score of 87, which means that you can give with confidence to this great organization.
And do you have any final thoughts before we go?
Well, I wanted to mention that I was in Lexington, Kentucky earlier this week for the Evangelical Press Association's annual meeting, and I'm pleased to report, if I could toot my own horn for a moment, that my weekly column editor's notebook brought home a 3rd place prize in the annual Awards of Excellence contest, and also had the privilege of presenting a Lifetime Achievement Award posthumously to Joel Bells, who is the founder of World Magazine and a friend and mentor to me and to Christina Darnell and to many others that work with and for Ministry Watch. I also want to remind everyone that this is the last week to get an important new book that we're offering to everyone who donates to Ministry Watch during the month of April. It's called How I Lost $1.5 million in Missions. It's by John Adink. If you're a donor to a foreign missions project, maybe you help support a missionary, or maybe you're a ministry leader for a missions organization. Maybe you're a pastor who supports missionaries. You should really get and read this book. We'll send it to you absolutely free as our thank you for a gift of any size to Ministry Watch this month. Just go to ministrywatch.com and hit the donate button at the top of the page.
The producer for today's program is Jeff McIntosh. We get database and other technical support from Stephen DeBerry, Rod Pitzer, and Casey Seddeth. Writers who contributed to today's program include Daniel Ritchie, Jessica Adjeralde, Clayton Seidenbender, Shannon Cuthrell, Brittany Smith, and Christina Darnell. A special thank you to Religion Unplugged for contributing materials for this week's podcast. And you've been listening to the Ministry Watch podcast. Until next time, may God bless you.